Where do you want to go now?
We'll go your number five.
My number five.
No, we've done your number five.
Let's go your number four.
Oh, my number four. All righty. Once again, over in the UK, this is a double banger, but it's both at the same place for the same event. 2013 and 2015 at the Winter Gardens in Blackpool, the World Match Play Darts.
When you hear Blackpool, there's only one sport that's happening.
It was tremendous.
Is it everything you ever dreamed of?
Yes.
Yes.
And more. I've wanted to go to either the World Match Play or the World Championships at Ali Pali for years. Mm. And managing not to go just once but twice, just so much
fun. Just for those of us who aren't darts aficionados, what is an Ali Pali?
Oh, Alexandra Palace.
There you go.
Sorry.
Thank you, yes.
The Winter Gardens in Blackpool, it's just... Essentially, it's a big theatre. Like, whatever your big theatre is in wherever you're listening, that's what it is. It's set up almost like a beer hall. So if you think of a Oktoberfest beer hall where there's just trestle tables, and plastic chairs.
Jugs?
Yes.
I'm assuming all receptacles are plastic.
Yes.
Yes, because things can get quite rowdy there.
Can and do, yes.
I believe that's the intent for that.
You would be surprised at how many families
really
were there. Yep.
I would be surprised by how many families were there. That's true.
It was incredible. So you get your seats, you get given a table number and chair numbers, and you just go along and you find the sticker on your trestle table, 17, and going, oh God, where are our seats? I guess it's these two here. And the whole crowd just gets right into it. I don't know what I was expecting in terms of being able to see, but when we sat down and then you're looking at this stage and trying to see where darts are falling on a dartboard 30 metres away from you.
People, it's hard seeing darts on a dartboard from 5 metres away, let alone...
Yeah.
In a cavernous place loaded with grog.
So you are watching...
with people jumping up and down in front of you.
Exactly. You are watching the screens.
I would have thought so, yes.
But it's so good. Like, they've got the little microphone sitting underneath the dartboard, so you hear the thunk when it hits. All of the players with their walkout music, the crowd singing along with whatever they want. And I still think, like, very simple... But like, stand up if you love the darts, stand up if you love the darts, over and over. Like, that would have been sung for 5 minutes.
Yeah, why not?
Until you're like, oh, I love the darts, but whew, I'm a bit tired.
Can't really stand up anymore. Yeah.
So
do you remember seeing... like Phil the Power Taylor or anyone like that? Was he gone by then or what was
that? No, so he was in. The first time I went, he was playing. He was up the next night, so I didn't see him. I'm not going to remember anyone that I saw except Simon the Wizard Whitlock in 2015.
Yeah.
Saw him and just all of the people there dressed up in various costumes.
Yeah, good vibes.
Really good vibes. And then... there's a little bar to the side and bathrooms next to that, and it's a bit of a quieter area.
Oh, that's nice.
2015, I needed to go to the bathroom, and I went, I'm going to be smart, and I'm going to go to this one that no one really knows about.
Yeah.
And I see sitting down, slumped in a chair, on his own, having some quiet time, Elvis. Just this bloke in the full-on white sequined
Hang on, early,
Elvis.
So also late Elvis.
Late Elvis. Ooh, just
cheeseburger Elvis.
Yeah. But this dude, he had a long night at the darts.
Oh, bless his heart.
And, yeah, he just needed some quiet time. So he was having a bit of a nap. But just walking through and seeing Elvis asleep, going, righto, I'm here.
So just out of interest, I don't know, because it's a long time ago now. Can you remember how much tickets were?
No.
Okay, never mind. I always wondered how much it would cost to go to the World Match Play Darts or something like that.
It definitely costs something.
Yeah, I imagine it.
But I do not know for the life of me.
If you know how much the darts cost to go to at Ali Pali, hit us up on Twitter at ASD_radio or facebook.com/asportingdiscussion. Andrew, let's keep this rolling.
What's your number four?
My number four is an AFL Grand Final Aussie Rules 2009, Geelong beating St Kilda by 12 points in the end because there was a very late goal kicked by Max Rook after
Jared to the max
for the Degenerates to cover the line. I think that was
a close game. All game. Was it low scoring? Was it like rainy a little bit?
It was rainy and slick, not wet. If there's a distinction,
yeah.
It's either one of the best games you've ever seen or one of the worst games you've ever seen because it was just basically a wrestle up and down the field because Ross Lyon coached St Kilda team who are defence first and stop all scoring whatsoever and then try to score on your own versus Geelong who in those days were preferring to free will but were leaning towards a little bit of a defensive setup as well. Both teams were their plans were stop the other person scoring and then try to do your best and score. It was 99,000 people. St Kilda hadn't won a premiership since 1966. And like I said at the start, and they haven't since. And there you could feel Geelong had only won one a couple of years earlier in 2007. So Geelong fans were kind of like, I want to feel that feeling again. That was really good. And Saints fans were angsting for some positivity or something after years and years and years and years, decades of being just tripe.
Had you been to the 2007 grand final?
No, I was offered tickets for $1,500 and 2007 AJ said no. I think I'm all right.
So this was your first ever grand final, Geelong grand final?
Second grand final. I'd been to a grand final between Carlton and North Melbourne and it was an absolute dirge of a game. The only best part of it was where we were, a guy in a Hawthorn jumper got in a fight with a guy in a Fremantle jumper. So why not?
Of course.
Why not? I love a sunburnt country. But the game was close. It was rugged. St Kilda missed a whole bunch of shots that would have had them pretty much free and clear. Because Geelong weren't playing well. Both teams. No, that's a bad thing to say. Both teams were playing at an incredibly high level. Like I said, though, they were just butting heads and smashing into each other, and it was a nil-all draw for a long time. But at the end, there's a break through the middle by Geelong with Stephen Johnson to Gary Ablett Jr. It gets spoiled by Zach Dawson. Matthew Scarlett comes through and toe pokes it. I'm more than happy to put this on our socials as well so everyone can see it. It goes back to Gary Ablett. He turns around and runs and lobs it into the 50 because he thought Scarlett was behind him shepherding and he thought he was about to get tackled, so he didn't run in and have a shot himself. The ball gets knocked down by Cam Mooney to Travis Varko, who handballs it to Paul Chapman, who kicks a goal to put Geelong 6 points ahead with about 4 minutes to go. That was the defining score. Geelong barely held on at the end, but that tension and that angst and the vibe of the crowd was just incredible. And that's why that's in my number four. For that last 10 minutes when the game was in the balance, everyone was just going bananas.
About six lead changes, I think, throughout the entire game. The last quarter started with St Kilda being ahead by 7 points. And Geelong kicking the only three goals of that quarter.
Yeah. And remember, one of those didn't count because it was essentially after the siren.
Oh, of course.
Geelong cleared the ball out to Max Rook, who held the ball aloft as the siren went, and then he turned around and dribbled the ball through for a goal because he had, I think, his hometown, they had a deal where everyone got a free beer if he kicked a goal. So he went, all right, well, I'll kick a goal. So they can all get a beer, yeah.
So that game itself, tight, really, really just, as you said, contested. Mm. I'm trying to find the
crowd for the new, it was 99,000.
99,251, which,
like I said, some people after the game were saying that's the greatest grand final that I've seen for a very long time. Others were saying that was just a dirge of scrum ball up and down the field until someone fluked a goal.
So because the two teams...
But the people in the crowd did not care.
No, of course not. The two teams had met earlier that year, round 14, and St Kilda won by a goal. And that I've saw on Twitter recently, the AFL were putting out, what's the greatest thing that you've seen at the MCG? And a lot of people, more like Geelong supporters, were saying that round 14 2009 game is the highest quality game of football they've ever seen. And I'm like, righto. So two excellent games between those two. But yeah, that experience of being at the grand final, at the winning grand final.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad. We've got three left to go each, but let's rip through some more listener comments. Andrew, Cyrus Aftasi, Japan at the 2006 World Cup. This would have been an unbelievable thing to be at. He says, Cyrus says, I invested a lot of my 20-year-old life to get to Germany. When Japan was 1-0 up, the Socceroos were staring at it at an early exit. Three goals in the final 10 minutes and I needed new underpants.
Entirely fair enough.
And he's also nominated, among other things, Arsenal v Tottenham at Highbury 2006. Now, that would have been something to go to because Arsenal and Tottenham hate each other. And they are the ones where... They hold tube trains so that only Tottenham fans can get on if it's at Arsenal, and only Arsenal fans can get on if it's at Tottenham. So they get them out of there quick,
right?
So there's no passionate embraces at the pub or spilling of beer. Thanks for that, Cyrus.
Cyrus has also he's one of his. I saw that he popped in another one. Is my number three, so I'm going to go straight into my number three.
Let's have it
if I can. And I think you might have been at this game as well. Hawthorn versus Melbourne, round 22 at the MCG, 1996.
Oh, was it that game?
It was the potential last game ever for the Hawthorn Football Club and the Melbourne Football Club in the as standalone entities. Throughout that season, there had been talk of teams needing to merge, the AFL really pushing that, and Hawthorn and Melbourne was the one. They were going to, I think it was $6 million was the incentive, and you could have something like 13 players from one team and 10 from the other. And it was seen as a great thing by some and as a terrible thing by a lot of others. There was in the build up to the lead up to that game, just so much, there were no merger signs distributed and all the Hawthorn fans holding those. Melbourne, depending on which, how you want to look at it and if you want to be cheeky or not, they actually voted yes to the merge. And the votes took place after this game, but it was all because of proxies and the way that the yes vote had manipulated proxies and locked people out of the vote.
Oh, okay. But I had no idea that.
I'm not going to let that stand in the way of abusing them, saying you voted your club out of existence. And Hawthorn, very famously, Don Scott stood up at the Camberwell Town Hall, I think, and held up the new jumper. Alleged new jumper. And he said, it's just a Melbourne jumper with a Velcro hawk. And he ripped the Velcro hawk off and held that up. And the whole crowd went, rah, rah, rah. And
rubble, rubble, rubble. But it did save the day.
It did save the day. Oh, yeah. I'm saying that in a positive way.
Who says that jumper he held up was actually the real thing? Or whether it had been created by no vote people? But hey, doesn't matter.
That game itself, though, so much like energy in the crowd like, do not take our club away from us. On field, Hawthorn needed to win to make finals. Jason Dunstall had kicked 90 goals for the season. He kicked his 10th goal in maybe the third quarter, or no, maybe his 100th goal for the year in the third quarter. Whole crowd, well, not the whole crowd.
Many people
ran on. And I just remember sitting there with my dad just going, we've got the momentum. Doesn't exist. We've got the momentum. What are these people? Got to get off the ground. Close game. I think Hawthorn ended up winning by 6 points. 1 point. There we go. Okay, so less than a goal the difference. Probably 1 point the difference. Ball goes into Melbourne's forward line. David Neitz leading out for the ball is about to mark the ball. Chris Langford on his hammer. Neitz slips a little bit. Langford comes through with the biggest spoil I've ever seen. In my memory, it went from centre half back to the wing.
It was massive and such a symbolic act.
You just began to roar. Because Chris Langford was one of the big proponents of the no vote amongst the players. Siren goes. Chris Langford takes his jumper off, holds it aloft to the crowd as if to say, this is bloody Hawthorn, and you are not getting rid of us. Oh, love it. God, that could have been my number one, actually.
Those chills.
That crowd was so good. It was just bubbling, and you just didn't know what was going to happen. And, oh.
Just incredible.
Yeah.
It's funny how we've been so lucky. We're going through our list here that the occasion has suited the crowd. The play on the field has suited the crowd, and I think that's probably why they're in our top.
I was going to say that's definitely why they're in there. Give me your number three, AJ.
It's another Aussie Rules one.
Mm.
My last Aussie Rules one, and it's 2012 Geelong versus Hawthorn at the MCG, and again, it wasn't a particularly, you know, ebbs and flows in all that game. Geelong went out and led by 53 points, I think it was. Then Hawthorn came back and took the lead and led by a couple of goals. And then Geelong brought it back. So there's, you know, big momentum swings, which don't exist apparently. One team dominating the other and then taking backseat while they themselves were the dominated one. Hawthorn had a couple of opportunities and one really, really big free kick that was not paid by an umpire for holding the ball with Cyril Rioli tackling whoever it was. I remember that because it happened right in front of us, and I thought, oh.
Right in front of us.
I thought, oh, that's not a good one. And then they didn't pay anything. I went, hey, life is good again. And Geelong took the ball down the field, and it ended up in the hands of a young Tom Hawkins, who had kicked 5 goals and about 30 seconds earlier had kicked an unbelievable goal to bring Geelong back to within 2 points. And he had the ball. He had to kick it about 60-odd metres. He was right in front, though. He was more than capable of doing so, but the only problem was he was a notorious shanker as well at that time. And if he missed, Hawthorn win. He went back and absolutely smashed the ball through the middle. He looked as surprised as any of us. The crowd went absolutely boonta bananas, whatever you want to call it. It was just insane. Hawthorn fans couldn't believe it. Geelong fans were all going bananas because they were 53 points up and then were certain to lose and then really just pinched it at the end. And that was, you know, the most definitely the game rising to the occasion, because that was in a good decade or so where Geelong and Hawthorn games were decided by less than a goal on like 99% of times.
It was right in the middle of that as well. So it was round 19. Hawthorn was one game behind Sydney on top of the ladder. Geelong were 2 games behind Hawthorn. And if they had have lost that game, then they're in the bottom reaches of the eight. It put Geelong 1 game behind Hawthorn, 1 game out of the top 4. Mm. So in the context, it was actually really quite good. So yeah, that game, it was 9-2 at quarter time to Geelong. And yeah, Hawthorn did get in front, and it was, I still remember.
I can't remember exactly, but I think Hawthorn might have even gotten ahead by 2 goals or something like that, 2 scores, which is why the Hawkins...
Biggest lead was 8 points, and that was in the 27 minutes and 11 minute mark of the last quarter, 114 to 106. Tom Hawkins kicked his goal.
He kicked. That's an unbelievable goal. That one, a snapshot running towards the boundary, with people on his hammer. You think I enjoyed that one? That was even better than the goal to win the game. Actually,
he kicked 3 in the last quarter, 4 of the last 5, and we were at that game, AJ.
We certainly were. I'm being very generous about that.
Oh, no. Go nuts.
I believe as the ball went through the goals, my brother was on the other side.
No, of Robbers.
No, our friend Robbers was on the other side of you. My brother was next to me, and my brother and I launched ourselves over you to get to Robbers, to embrace and hug and do all the things that winning supporters do, and you took that very well.
Oh, it was great. Yes. Hey, good on them.
There have been occasions where that has gone back the other way too, yes.
Yeah, but it was such an interesting game of football, like seesawing and the, what was it, 65,000 people on a Friday night at the MCG.
Yeah.
And it was, look, not the result that I was hoping for, but...
Everyone had a nice time.
It was a great game. And Tom Hawkins just... That he kicked that so far.
He ploughed that ball. He absolutely smashed it. All right. We've got 2 left each, Andrew. We might just quickly go to our second audio submission, which is from great friend of the show, who also appeared with us on Triple R over the summer, Arangella Hunty, the best netball writer in the business and one of the best freelance sports journos you will find out there. Here's Erin's favourite live event she'd ever been to.
At the risk of being remarkably predictable, I have to name the 2015 Netball World Cup in Sydney, which was the first major tournament I covered as a freelancer, as the best sporting event I've ever been to. That's mainly because of the fanaticism of the home fans, the massive crowds we saw day in, day out at Sydney's Olympic Park, and of course the result, which was a good one for Australia. The whole tournament was just a joyous celebration of what is, in my humble opinion, the greatest game in the world, and it had a final for the ages with a world record 16,752 fans just locked in for every moment. I think that record still stands in world netball. So after losing to New Zealand in the pool rounds, the Australian Diamonds, who are just expected to win, no excuses, especially at home, they faced New Zealand in the gold medal match on the last day of play. It was a defensive masterclass from captain Laura Geitz and Julie Corletto in the first quarter that set up the 3-goal win, although the Ferns were coming like a freight train in the last. And if the match had run a minute or more, I think the result may have been different. We later found out that Corletto, in her last game for her country, had played the second half of the match against Kiwi superstar Maria Tutaer, who's now Maria Folau, with a broken foot. Now, if only she was a man, there'd be a statue of her somewhere, wouldn't there? But all of those factors combined mean that I have to go with the 2015 Netball World Cup.
Always with the broken foot, Andrew. Always with the defending with the broken foot, Erin.
Build him a statue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not enough. Yeah, more statues.
Well, actually, speaking of Sherelle McMahon
this week. They did a Sherelle McMahon statue this week in Melbourne. They've unveiled it, yes.
Which, I saw some amusing tweets about that.
Are these going to make me angry? Are they morons? Are they morons?
No. They're not morons. They're people who are pointing out, one of them from Arangella Hunty herself, sad I can't be at the unveiling of the bronze statue of netball icon Sherelle McMahon at Melbourne's John Cain Arena today. The girl from, I don't know where she's, Bamawm, is the first netballer and just the fifth sportswoman to be immortalised in bronze in Victoria. And she's the first Victorian. Sherelle joins Olympians Betty Cuthbert, Shirley Strickland, Nova Peris and AFLW star Taylor Harris. There are 29 statues of male athletes in Victoria and 3 of racehorses. So,
really?
Yep.
I had no idea that there's 3 racehorse statues.
And it just shows, yes, that there needs to be more of our favourite sportswomen. Now
that's Bamawm. She's from, which is in central Victoria.
Thank you.
Yes.
I've no idea how to say that.
If we get that wrong, there won't be another episode for this.
There's another one that I can't find it.
And look, thank you to everyone who has given us listener comments. I know this is a little bit, incredibly much later than we first promised this episode. But hey, thanks for taking part. And if you would like to take part, switching voice, go to Twitter at ASD_radio, facebook.com/thesportingdiscussion, or you can leave us an audio message like Beefy and Erin both did. We will put the link to that in the show notes and pump it out across the social media during the week. But Andrew, should we rock, paper, scissors for who does their second one first?
You go.
All right. I would have chosen paper, which would have won anyway. My second favourite event is the 2019 NRL Grand Final. Now, that is the Sydney Roosters versus the beautiful, glorious people's team of the Canberra Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who knows their sporting history knows that the Raiders came out losers on that day.
They were not victorious.
They were not
the father of the boy who doesn't win.
they were not victorious, but, geez, they came out of there with heart and respect, Andrew. And that's what you want when you're in a Grand Final. You don't want to win it. You want to come out with heart and respect.
Yeah, you want to be the moral victor on Grand Final Day. Sure you do. talk to me about the lead up to that game. You went, obviously, but you live in Melbourne. The Grand Final was not in Melbourne.
Homebush Stadium in Sydney.
One of the good things about the NRL is that it's quite easy to get tickets for a grand final if you are a club member, and even if you're not, and they're reasonably priced. So that's one thing that the NRL has way over the AFL. So the vibe at an NRL grand final was significantly different to the ones I've experienced at AFL grand finals. And I know I had an AFL grand final in my top five there, but that's why this one is higher, because there's more people who actually care about the teams there. It was a really tight game, a really tense game. The Raiders played really well. The Roosters were going for back-to-back premierships.
Roosters were favourites, weren't they?
They were favourites by a mile. They played really, really well too. There was controversy.
Six again.
The trainer, very early in the game, the Roosters trainer was hit by a ball that got kicked, that got charged down by a Raiders player. And if the trainer had not been there, then the Raiders would have scored. Could have scored.
And you never know what happens after that.
Opportunity for score. You know, lightning could have struck the ground. They could have.
We've all seen Back to the Future.
Noah and his ark could have arrived.
Yeah, Marty McFly might have married his mum.
Aliens could have come down. You know, anyway, but the ball hitting the trainer caused yet another change of rules for the next season about when trainers are allowed on the field, because it was like 5 minutes into the game and the trainer was there to bring water to everyone and all that. And they say, like, what are you doing out there 5 minutes into the game, mate? There was controversy, like you said, with six again, where the referee waved for a reset of he thought the ball had come off James Tedesco, which meant the Raiders got another set of tackles, which meant they were about 15 metres out from scoring, and it was 8-6, I think the score was at the time, or something like that. But anyway, forgetting all the on-field stuff, the Roosters ended up winning because on the back of that 6 again call that got turned over, the Raiders weren't ready in defence, too busy feeling sorry for themselves, and the Roosters went the length of the field and scored the decisive try. But it's the experience of going to the game, you know, the vibes going into the game. Everyone thinks their team is a chance. It's a night grand final too, which I'd never been to. And that was really, really good fun experience. They had, I think it was, what are they called? I can't remember who the act was.
The entertainment
was. I keep thinking One Direction, but One Republic, that's who it was. One Republic, who were quite good.
Sure, know, why not?
Poppy 3-minute tunes from the States that have been used in ads and remixed by DJs and all that. So, you know, good, harmless, inoffensive fun.
Nat Bass sang Advance Australia Fair.
Yeah.
One Republic. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't mind One Republic. Sold millions of records. They're younger than us, so don't worry about it. It was just a really good atmosphere, a great game. At the end, you know, Raiders fans were devastated. However, we didn't realise that, because phone reception in any stadium is garbage, we didn't realise the controversy of that 6 again call, that it had been overturned or anything like that. We thought we saw the referee wave his hand, and then play continued and we just got on with watching it. But we didn't realise, a lot of people didn't realise, that all of the controversy was going on and people were saying the Raiders were robbed, blah, 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 until phone reception started coming back. And you could see it like coming, it was a wave around the stadium, Raiders fans looking at their phone going, hang on a minute.
We've been robbed.
If I'd known about that, I would have been outraged.
Yeah.
But it was just a great experience, a great time. And also, one of the things that the NRL does well is they basically put half the stadium one team, half the stadium another team. The AFL likes to mix theirs up across different rows and that, because there's so many suits there. They break up the fans so much. So one half, the half we were in was just all green, all Raiders, and the other half was all red, white and blue, all Roosters, and it was just great. Just, you know, a great night, a great time.
Awesome.
Apart from the result.
And I like the fact that the number two is not, I saw my team win a grand final.
Yeah.
It's a losing. I don't think I've got any losing ones in mine. Well, except for me losing the dryness of my pants in the Coogee Bay Hotel.
Or your mind at results.
Or my mind, yes. My number two, AJ. My number two is cricket. It is the 2019 Ashes Test match at Old Trafford. Now, they, like all sub grounds in the UK, there's not much. There's not, the capacity's not great.
Yeah, you wouldn't know. Years of watching the Ashes on telly and all of that, you would, and the stadiums we have here in Australia, you don't realise that a lot of the stadiums that Premier League clubs play in and, you know, Ashes tests are played in, you're just walking down a suburban street and then, oh, there's an oval there.
Yep. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's like a local ground in a local area just with big grandstands.
So the, I'm trying to find the capacity of it, because they build a temporary stand. And there was the Cricket World Cup was just before it, and so this temporary stand had been up for quite a while. And I'm pretty sure the temporary stand might hold, I want to say, 15,000 people. It is a feat of engineering greatness.
Weight-bearing greatness.
Weight-bearing greatness. We went to day either 1, 2, and we were meant to go to day 1, 2, and 4 or 1, 3, and 4. And over the course of those days, just seeing screws, nuts, and bolts on the ground at the bottom of that. They clearly went, right, this thing needs, let's say, 4,000 screws for it to stay up.
Let's use 8,000.
Let's use 14,000. Yes. Like, there was, they were,
let's hope that's what happened.
That's what I'm going with. Yeah. That's what I'm going with.
Well, you're still here, so they used at least 4,001.
Yes.
Yes.
So it might be 7,000. So 15,000 is their capacity, 22,000 with the temporary stand.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, so there we go, 71 rows, 8,560 seats.
Wow.
47
God, you'd be
kilometres of scaffolding.
Yeah, with the effort to do that, you'd just put a permanent one in.
Well, they're going to. Yeah. It took 25 days for 15 people to build it.
The overheads, Andrew, the overheads. God.
Steve Smith.
The labour, the parts. Anyway.
We must have been there day one and day two. Steve Smith made a double century. It was his return series after the sandpaper suspensions.
That's right. And he was absolutely copping it from the crowd.
Everywhere in the crowd. We saw you cry on the telly, cry on the telly. Now, not my finest moment, aided by the people sitting next to me one of the guy's wives worked at a gin distillery and they had bought gin in Ribena bottles into the ground
were
sharing that with us. So, yeah, we saw you cry on the telly. It's like, you also saw him score a double century at Old Trafford, you twat. And the guys behind me are just like, oh, I thought you were better than that. I'm like, nope, I'm not. Australia.
Another thing, just quickly. Really need to watch yourself doing something like that over in the UK, because their crowd vibes can be slightly different to those we experience here in Australia too.
Yes. Yes. These people were like a couple of bays away.
Yes. So luckily it was fine. You with a voice like a foghorn could have been heard from wherever you were.
Exactly. So it was all right. Australia 497 for 8 declared. England 301. So Australia then needed to bat, and they probably weren't going to lose the game, but then they were 4 for 44, and it was like, oh, bugger, what's going to happen here? Is England going to run through us?
Crowd,
I don't want to be here when this is happening. Steve Smith, Matthew Wade joined him.
Temporary
Wade made 34.
Rocking.
Temporary stand, like heaving, swaying.
Shaking back and forward.
Steve Smith, he made 82, but he got to that point where he's gone, righto, it's declaration time. So he did his Steve Smith declaration batting where they'd bowl short balls and he would like play a forehand smash back over the bowler's head. And it was so much fun. Australia had a few overs at England at the end of day four. They had 7 overs at them. Pat Cummins coming in. He gets Rory Burns caught by Travis Head for a duck. That was the third ball of the reply. England needing 383 or bat for a day and 7 overs. Very next ball comes in, bowls one of the greatest deliveries to Joe Root, hits the pitch, moves away, dunk, off stump, gone. Myself and my mate Danny absolutely losing our mind. Just go, this is great. Go, if we can just get one more wicket, if we can get a four down at the end of the day, like we can do this. Remembering the test match before that was Headingley, where Ben Stokes had the last wicket partnership with Jack Leach to win that test match.
Yeah.
And Australia needed to win one more test to guarantee that they were going
to
retain
the
Ashes.
To halve the series and retain the Ashes, yeah.
End of that day, they were 2 for 18, and I was meant to be on a flight to Sweden the next morning to go and spend some time with my mate Danny and his family.
Mm. And they had to wait a day, I'm guessing.
No, well, no, he said to me, he's just gone, well, you don't have to go and pick up my kids from the airport and you can stay for an extra day and come to Sweden afterwards, see if you can get a fifth day ticket. And I'm like, I won't be able to get day five ticket. I won't be able to do that. We got to the pub afterwards, got on some Wi-Fi. It's like, oh, my God, there's tickets for like 20 quid. Yes.
Away we go.
I'm doing that. Yeah. Went to that next day where England weren't going to win, but they just needed to bat out for a draw. Australia started out okay, got a couple of wickets. Then England started to bat and bat and bat and bat. And then Australia's gone, boom, again, more wickets. And I had made friends with a couple of Pommy lads who had only just gotten into cricket because of the World Cup and the Headingley Test, and they were like, we were just having the most fun at the cricket. That like we were both going, oh, hey! And then the most stubborn partnership eventually was Jack Leach, I think, was the one to go out. Manus Labuschagne came in, he got the ninth wicket, and then Craig Overton, 21 runs off 105 balls, had been there forever, hit on the pad, everyone goes up. Rah! I'm not sure if it was given out or given not out, but it was reviewed.
Mm.
And whilst the review was going on, everyone's just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And then, boom.
And that was it.
Three reds out. The whole Australian contingent, i.e. me, lost my mind. And it was one of the greatest days I've ever experienced at a sporting event.
Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the end of part two of the greatest sporting events you've ever seen live. This is a sporting discussion. Remember, you can tweet us at ASD_radio or go to facebook.com/asportingdiscussion. And don't forget our website, asportingdiscussion.com.au. In part three, Andrew and I will talk about the greatest sporting events we have ever seen live, but we will also touch on the worst we've ever seen live. Keep your eye on your podcast inbox.